Hi, it's Zoe, and we're talking about how leaders can be an environment for expansion or contraction. Leaders can be either a catalyst or a cannibal when it comes to success with their teams. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hey, I'm back from Tasmania. Oh my goodness, what an extraordinary place. I was amazed at how beautiful it was. I had expectations that it was going to be pretty astounding. And then being there on the Freycinet Peninsula, it was beautiful. The beaches were granite sand, so very fine white sand, which made the sea when the sun was out, which wasn't very often actually. We had an unseasonal, unexpected wind and rainy time down there, and normally it's a lot more dry. In any case, when the sun came out, the water was this exquisite turquoise with these beautiful pearly white beaches. And the landscape itself was all granite tors and granite boulders, and so it had this marvelous contrast. And it was just stunning, a very kind of pristine, beautiful environment. And it got me thinking, this, like the trip itself, which was a leadership intensive with leaders from Canberra and one from Sydney, where we gathered from different industries to spend 4 days together to plan out 2018, to really think about and take stock of where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. And we did that through immersing ourselves in this extraordinary landscape. And it's got me thinking about environments and how environments cause evolution. It's a concept I learned some time ago when I was first a coach from Thomas Leonard, who founded Coach U and Coachville. And he was very big on being deliberate in how you craft your environments. And I remember one of my first coaches said, well, you are actually an environment for your clients. I went, what? What does that actually mean? And he explained to me that as a coach and as a leader, how you show up, how you interact with people is a type of environment that can either catalyze change and growth or cause a negative impact. And so if we think of ourselves as an environment that is in service to our work and to the people that we lead, it changes a little bit how we think about showing up and how our decisions and how we engage. So that is sort of what sparked today's topic in terms of leader as catalyst or leader as cannibal. And the other reason cannibal came up is because we learned about the story of Alexander Pierce, who was an escaped convict on one of the islands down in Tasmania. And he made it to the wilderness with, I think it was seven others or six others. And after a while, because they had no tools, there wasn't much wildlife, they got hungry, so they boiled their shoes first, and then they noticed that a couple people were getting weak. And so one by one, they picked off and ate the stragglers, until there was just two left, and they were staring at each other over the campfire and waiting to see who would fall asleep first. And one guy did first, and Alexander Pierce knocked him over the head and had him for dinner. And that's how he survived crossing Tasmania to get to the other side, where he declared what he had done, and no one believed him. And they sent him back to the prison where he had escaped from. And then what happened? He escaped again with another group of people and did the same thing again. He coerced people or convinced them that eating the weak was going to be essential to their survival. But this time he kept bits and pieces of the bodies to prove that what he had done. So I think he probably went a bit loopy lala in the head at this stage. He made it all the way over Tasmania again, whereupon they said, okay, we believe you now, and they hung him. So it's quite an extraordinary story that I hadn't heard before, and I was quite mesmerized by this whole concept of survival and environment in the negative sense, and how environment can really push us to do devastating things, like eat each other. That's kind of an extreme situation. And yet, how different an experience it could have been. And I think about Shackleton as one of the most glorious leaders in terms of keeping his crew alive through extraordinary circumstances down in Antarctica, through frozen ice and through ending up on an island with nothing and then sailing in a boat across the ocean 600 Ks in adverse conditions and then climbing over a snow-ridden, snow-capped island to get to a whaling station to then send a boat round to rescue his crew, and nobody died. Not a single one, and nobody ate each other. So there's definitely two ways to skin a cat, not to get too gory in the analogies. And yet this whole idea that as leaders, how we show up can catalyze or cannibalize, I think is a really important one. So that's what I wanted to chat about today. The other thing I wanted to mention too is two books that are having a huge impact on me. One is by Robert Peng. Peng, P-E-N-G, and it's called The Master Key. And he's a Qigong healing practitioner. So Qigong is an ancient healing practice as well as a martial art. And it's his personal story and then his techniques on how to do visualization and energy and manipulating energy to heal the body and to create energy in the body. It's astounding. It's completely mesmerizing. And I wouldn't have paid that much attention to it, except for the first exercise he has you do is put your palms together with the heel of the hand together. And then you have a look at your fingertips and you see that they're equal. And then all you do is a simple exercise where you take your right hand and put it point with the fingers pointing up to the sky, and you visualize your fingers extending up as far as you can into the sky and beyond, and you do that for a minute or so. And then what you do next is you bring your palms back together, heels of the hand together, and you will find that your right hand fingers will have extended and are now longer than the left hand. I thought, I'll give this a go. So I did it, you know, and just visualized my hand growing, and lo and behold, half a centimeter longer were my right hand fingers. I just burst out laughing. I thought, this is astonishing. And of course, I've done lots and lots of experimentation and reading and of mind-body connection and the flow of energy. And this book has been a real gateway for me in terms of the practical application and real tangible outcomes you can get by doing these visualization techniques. So I'll put a link to the book in the show notes, which will be at zoerouth.com/podcast/environment. So you'll find Robert Peng's book there. And the next one that I was reading on the plane back from Tasmania was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. It's a classic text, and it's the story of Viktor Frankl, who was a prisoner in a concentration camp during the World War II. And he was also a psychologist, and a doctor. And through his experiences in the concentration camp, he came to determine what kept men alive, what made the difference between those who survived and those who died. It was a conscious choice, basically. And those often, and well, no, some people died of disease and wounds and that kind of thing. And for those who didn't, they simply gave up. They had no meaning left to live for. They did not have a purpose beyond what they were existing. And so they had no sense of, this is what it could do for me. This is what could be possible. And so they simply gave up. Extraordinary book, and I wish I'd read it sooner, but I guess the books show up in your life when you're ready for them, and I was ready for this one. So that's sort of filtering through my thinking and consciousness around how leaders can really take charge of their attitude and their focus to make a difference. All right, so back to leaders as environment. So the first story is, the first experience I had recently of this was I was speaking at a CPA Congress here in Canberra, which was a congress for chartered professional accountants, mostly in the public service. And I was doing a half-day workshop on leading through change. So it was all about how you experience change, understanding the social dynamics of change and the neuroscience of change, and how you can take control of yourself and manage social dynamics to make it more effective. In any case, I got there early, got set up in my room, was all ready, and then the conference organizer said, would you mind, and she was feeling really awkward about it, she said, the director of another giant firm that is one of their sponsors is not really happy with their room because they were planning to do all these interactive activities. Would you mind swapping with them? And I thought to myself, well, I'm doing a workshop on change. It wouldn't really do to dig my heels in and say, no, I won't change. So I said, sure. And she took me down to the new room, which ended up being a theaterette. Basically, it was a really crappy room. There were no windows. It was really awkward to run a workshop in because I had about 20 people in a room full of 300. So getting interaction and collaboration and engagement when you were standing at the front of the room in this massive theater, very challenging. And so in that experience, I was thinking the impact of physical space can have a huge, huge effect, either in a negative way or in a positive way. So because I went up after my workshop to see my friend was also presenting, and she had a fantastic little room, you know, plenty of natural light, round tables where everybody could converse and engage and write. And I was like, oh, it just made my job harder. And this is the key point. If you are having to work in a space that is just crappy, let's face it, how much more you have to bring to the table as a leader, whether you're coach, trainer, facilitator, or leading a team. Sometimes you can't get around the space that you have and you have to make it work. So being aware of how detracting and distracting and how irritating some spaces can be and how they can really oppress people, have them shrink down, have them contract, is being aware of that is really critically important. So then you can manage the space as best as you can, manage the movement of the people as best you can. So I had people getting up and doing activities, which help lift the energy and the engagement as well. And then the critical piece is how you show up as a leader. And there's three essential aspects to how you as a leader can be a catalyst instead of a cannibal. And the first one is around your energy. Is your energy inwardly focused or outwardly focused? Well, this is how you can tell. If it's inwardly focused, you are caught up in your own internal narrative. You're caught up in your own story, your own worries, your own impressions, and you're not essentially present. So your energy needs to be outward focused, which means that you need to be clearly looking at, feeling, putting out intentions for the other people in the room. So that you look at them, you smile at them, you engage with them, you invite them into your vortex of energy. So you have to gear up, you need to express, you need to put out energy. And it needs to be very outward focused, not in a, I'm going to entertain the bazoozus out of you. I don't even know what a bazoozu, it just came out. I'm going to show up and create an energy in this crappy space that in itself is enough. So that by showing up as engaging, as positive, as affirming, as encouraging, and you don't have to be an extrovert to do this. You don't have to be a show pony. It's all about being present and in service. And when you show up in service and in friendliness and in openness, your energy is on track to uplift. So the second aspect of what a leader needs to do in terms of being an environment that catalyzes is your physicality. And it doesn't matter how tall or how small you are, how big or how little you are, how you show up physically in terms of, are you grounded? Are your feet planted in the ground? Are you standing tall? Are your shoulder bones nice and straight? Because that kind of centered energy really conveys a strong message of confidence, of being self-assured, and of being fully present. If you are rolled over, soft shoulders, shrunken, fidgeting, distracted, people, you're going to lose people. They're going to be put off by your chaotic and scattered type of energy. So you really need to be centered, and you can do this by digging your feet into this is my nose toes pose technique I teach all the time. And that is breathing. That's the nose part. So breathing. So bringing your attention to your breath, which basically brings your attention back to the moment, and your breath, you're always breathing. So you already always have that as a hook, and you don't have to do necessarily huge, big, deep breaths because that also can be distracting. It's just like, just watching a breath in and out. Do that three times. So that's nose. Toes is digging your toes into the ground. Because when you do that, it cuts out all of your catastrophizing and inner internal chatter and goes, toes, ground, feel toes on the ground. And that is a way of getting rooted in the present moment. Now, if you're clever, you will also imagine yourself growing tree roots down to the center of the earth. And that is activating visualization that helps you get grounded. And that grounded energy keeps you present and still and stable. And that is really reassuring and really engaging for people. So that's how you do it. And the pose piece, thank you, Amy Cuddy, and your fabulous groundbreaking research on this. Power pose is doing Wonder Woman or Superman. So basically doing power poses. When I say power pose, you can imagine what that looks like. Hands on the hips, doing the victory pose, hands behind the head, basically making yourself bigger and more alpha-like, more dominant-like. And what that does, Amy Cuddy's work has shown that it changes your biochemistry after 2 minutes. You boost up testosterone, you reduce cortisol and adrenaline, and you convey assertiveness in micro-nuanced messages. So when you do nose, toes, and pose, you show up centered. And this is very stabilizing and inviting and magnetic to the people around you. So this is one way you can manage your energy and your physicality to create an environment that draws people in, that invites conversation, that encourages openness. And the last thing you can do as a leader, as an environment, is to mind your language. It is amazing how powerful language actually is. Now, there's this statistic out there that says, 70% of messages is subconscious body language. And apparently that's not true. That's only true when you're in rapport. When you're not in rapport, when you're trying to build rapport, the language that you use has significant impact. So when we choose our words carefully and we're mindful of how we express ourselves, it does make a difference. So an example of this is using I language or me language, which is very inward, self-centered language, versus using we language, inclusive language, us language. And that subtle shift makes a big difference in terms of inviting people in. So you can imagine a speech where somebody says, you need to do this, you need to consider this, you should probably do this. And there's another word that kind of is a cringy one. It's commanding language. You should, you ought to, you must. That kind of commanding language basically puts a barrier between you and your audience. So, and you and your team. Instead, you could use inviting language, such as, you might consider this. You could do this. It might be an idea too. Think about. So if you soften the language in terms of invitation and using it as an option for people to consider instead of you do this, which is commanding, things change. People start to buy in more to your message. So it's a difference between being didactic, I'm going to tell you, I'm the sage on the stage, I know what I'm talking about, I'm the expert, to versus I have some ideas, you have some ideas, let's share them, let's see what we can create in this conversation, how we can collaborate a solution together. So when you shift your language and you become mindful of the messages that you're giving out, and the other thing to be mindful with language too is excessiveness and using absolutes like you never or I never or that will never happen or you must do this. So never and always are always definitive black and light language that can be alienating because quite often it's not true. You don't always do that and you don't never do that. So those kinds of words can seep into our vocabulary, especially when we're wound up about something. And so if we're mindful of that, it can be really helpful. And the other three-letter word that is of great consternation is, and you know it, B-U-T, but. Using the word but is such a heavy, loaded question. And it's like, yeah, you did a really great job, and I like this about your speech, but I think you could have added in this, and I think that this might have been better. So the message is, and you heard it, it's obvious, we can feel it, it's like, I don't really care about your speech, and I just want to serve you my impression of what you need to do differently. So you need to change. There we go. That's me using commanding language. I strongly suggest you change the word but, not to however. People always say, can we use however? I was like, no, it's the same meaning. You change it to and. I appreciated your speech. I heard your message. And you might consider doing this. Have you thought about including this? You can see how it's inclusive and collaborative instead of, yeah, but. I call this the patent slap. You know, good job, but slap. So we want to avoid that kind of language as well. All right. So leader as environment, the three things to manage are your energy. Is it inward or is it outward focused? Are you stuck in your own brain catastrophizing, or are you outward focused and really engaging, smiling, inviting the audience and the people around you? Your physicality, are you centered or are you scattered? And your language, are you using commanding or collaborating language? Those three things will help you become a better environment. And make no mistake, if your space is not conducive to supporting the group development, then you have to up your game. You need to make up for the difference of what the environment is detracting. So that requires an enormous amount of energy. And you need to also then look after yourself afterwards, after the engagement, to make sure you replenish your energy. I would love to hear your thoughts on how the leader can be an environment for the team and the group. So again, the show notes, if you want to look up Robert Peng or Viktor Frankl, are at zoerouth.com/podcast/environment. And otherwise, you know what? Have a great week. Live well, lead well.